Dr. Susan Kalb, and today it's my pleasure to have with us Dr. Connie Stapleton, the author of Eat It Up, The Complete Mind, Body, Spirit Guide to a Full Life After Weight Loss Surgery. Dr. Stapleton is a licensed psychologist and the owner of Mind Body Health Services in Augusta, Georgia, not too far from us in Atlanta. And she has written a book that is a must-read for anybody contemplating any sort of weight loss surgery. There's a number of different ones now. And, of course, those who have actually undergone the surgery. Thanks for joining us, Connie.
You're welcome, and thank you for having me.
So, you have taken an in-depth look at not just food addictions, but the primary, I guess, energetic and spiritual causes behind that would qualify behind all addictions, from
Absolutely.
What I can see in your book. So let's start off there, because not everybody on the show is going to have a food addiction, but I'd say probably a number of people listening to the show have other addictions or know family members and friends who have these addictions. What is it that causes us to engage in repetitive behavior that may not be good for us?
Well, I think there's both a biological and a psychological component. You know, there's been a lot of research conducted on addiction in general, whether it be to a substance or to food or a drug or alcohol, and they're finding a lot of genetic components to that. There's also a lot of psychological reasons that people turn to substances, whether, again, it be alcohol, drugs, or food, gambling, whatever it happens to be. But those reasons primarily include trying to avoid experiencing painful emotions.
I've interviewed some other authors who have written on this topic. One of the more interesting ones was Dr. Nick Demetri, who, with a family practice physician who I do not recall the name of, both of these doctors were studying with Discalos in Cyprus before he died.
Mm-hmm.
And they came up with some really, really interesting energetic information about addictions. Discalos was teaching about desire thoughts. You may know that in the spiritual world, thoughts are actually probably more important than things in terms of creating our reality. So every time, their book describes it, every time you had a desired thought, that would be, you know, I want a cigarette, I want a,
right.
you know, I want a whatever, you know, it doesn't matter, I want food. It doesn't matter the cause or the reason why you want that, but every time that desire thought goes out, it takes a bit of your etheric energy with it. And that actually weakens you.
I agree with that.
So the more you desire something in this cycle of desire thought, the actual, you erode at your willpower, which is...
I completely agree with that. You know, our behavior follows the direction of our thoughts.
Right, it does. And you really describe that well in your book. I don't remember what page it's on, but would you like to go over the thought, what is it, thought, you know that cascade that you went
right,
through.
Right, the thoughts and the feelings
right.
and the behavior, sure.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. If you have a thought, which of course we can't always control our thoughts, they may just pop into our head, but at that point you either choose to dwell on that thought, be it I want a cigarette, I want a drink, I want to go raid the refrigerator,
mm-hmm.
And if you continue along those thinking patterns, you're going to feel, you know, happy or excited or sad or angry, whatever it is.
Right.
But our behavior then follows in line with our predominant thoughts. So the likelihood is you're going to follow through with that. Whereas if you think, oh, my gosh, I want a cigarette, and then you say, wait a minute, I do want a cigarette, but that's not a healthy choice for me. I'm going to preoccupy myself in something healthy.
Mm-hmm.
You're more likely to follow through with that train of thought in your behavior as well.
And one thing I tell my patients, I quit smoking after 20 years of smoking because I was spiritually guided to. I was told that my life mission was not in alignment with my smoking, and if I didn't quit smoking, I'd be taken out. And then when I woke up in the ICU almost intubated, I figured that guidance was going to be going to come true. But anyway, with life-threatening asthma. But anyway, so what I did was I acknowledged that that guidance was probably not just a threat, but that would be carried through. So I went ahead and I did what we call bargaining. And bargaining's a lot of fun. People don't realize that you can actually bargain with your spiritual guidance. I said, fine. If you want me to quit smoking, take the desire away.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened was interesting because it was in alignment with my life path. I was given the name of a psychiatrist. I was in the military at that time. I was a major. And that psychiatrist saw me to quit smoking. And he hypnotized me, and he let me remember what was going on during the hypnotism, though, so I could relate it probably to on the radio show and on in to my patients and everything. But what he did was, after he hypnotized me, he pulled up the back of the skin of my hand and stuck an 18-gauge needle through it.
Wow.
That's
wow.
Great. Well, you know, I'm a surgeon, you know, you got to get a physical demonstration there. But then he said, you're only going to bleed out of that side, you know, when he takes it out.
Right.
And then when he took it out, I only bled out of one side.
Oh, my gosh.
Now, what a great demonstration. And then he basically, as a side, said, you won't want a cigarette ever again. And I didn't.
Wow.
One hypnotherapy session. And this really impressed me because I have a lot of willpower. I mean, most surgeons do.
Right.
I quit 6 or 7 times on willpower. But what was the problem? You always wanted a cigarette.
Right.
What does that do to your life? It makes it unpleasant.
Right.
So that got me going with the subconscious desires.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, that started really a spiritual exploration of where these desire thoughts come from. And you've done a good job in your book tracking those back to often childhood issues. And from what I can tell from reading Nick Demetri's book based on Discalus's work, and Discalus was a master. He many people saw him bilocate, perform healings, you know, all sorts of stories about that would only be possible with a master. So that always interested me because I figured the masters might know something we don't.
Right.
you know, it might be good to study with one. But essentially, there is deep within us an unconscious, subconscious, whatever you want to call it, field that we need to know about and we need to know how to access and we need to know how we can use that to help with addiction.
And we need to be able to give ourselves permission to explore those feelings related to previous situations, because oftentimes those feelings are what prevent us in the present from making healthy decisions. It's like feelings from a previous time in our life kind of drive the bus.
And oftentimes, when you're in a family situation, when you're a child, you have less power, obviously.
Absolutely.
So in a family situation, if a child even perceives that there's danger in a certain behavior, they will suppress that. And then it goes not just behaviors, it goes to feelings.
Right.
Well, if the feeling leads to the behavior, I better suppress the feeling.
Absolutely.
And then after suppressing feelings, what happens, and Discalus talks about this through the Dr. Demetri and his family practice doctor, we get something called shame. I mean, that's what results when we keep suppressing stuff. Something must be wrong with me because of their behavior toward me, or even not toward me, just in front of me. Because, I mean, a 3-year-old starts thinking that he is responsible for his parents fighting.
Well,
right?
If you think about it simply in terms of developmental theory, you know, children are egocentric by
nature.
Right,
yeah.
They don't
everything relates to them.
Absolutely. If something's going wrong, what did I do to cause it?
That's right. So it's very interesting that healthy behavior and healthy thinking is that we don't suppress are either our feelings or even our thoughts, because the thought, like you said, we don't know where the thought comes from, but a lot of times the thought comes from our higher guidance or our conscious or whatever you want to call it. And that thought I had one the other day. I was coming over a mountain in a dangerous situation. I had the thought there was a really dangerous situation up front. And guess what? There was. I was going to get squeezed between a tanker who was ignoring me and somebody going really fast behind me. So these thoughts you need to pay attention to because sometimes they're very protective.
Right.
And so you don't suppress the thoughts. And many people say, I usually ask them in the emergency room when I go in and treat them, I said, didn't you have the thought that maybe you shouldn't have done that? And then, and most of them say, yeah, you know, I was given the warning, but I went ahead and did it anyway. So I'll ask them, why did you do it? Well, my friends talked me into it, you know.
Right. Absolutely.
So we have this protective field around us. Now, I'm not saying if you're supposed to have an accident, for a reason, if there's a higher reason for you to have that accident, you probably will get absolutely no warning about it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just from my own personal experience in 26 years in the emergency room questioning people about their accidents. It really is. But then when you're supposed to have an accident, you just never know. I mean, nobody ever tells you. You can go get a psychic reading. It'll never be in there, you know, because it's karmic. And what that means is that there's some life-altering course that you need to take. It happened to me when I broke my arm in 2006. I was headed toward lung cancer because I wasn't taking care of myself at all. I was covering 6 emergency rooms and whatever, and so I never had any warning. I'm extremely clairvoyant. I never had any warning whatsoever that I was going to break my arm. I had warnings before that I needed to change my lifestyle. Plenty of those.
Right.
But when I broke my arm, obviously I wasn't going to operate.
Obviously not. My God.
After I got out of the severe pain, I started laughing like crazy. Like, okay.
Wow.
Isn't this interesting? Because I had, not deliberately, but stubbornly ignored the multiple warnings that were coming toward me. And so instead of dying of lung cancer, I took time and healed my body, and I was never diagnosed with lung cancer except energetically by a number of people. They said, you're going toward lung cancer. You're going, you know, and with 20 years of smoking and with a stressful lifestyle and with a genetic history of such, chances are I was. So now I'm clear of that because I changed a lot of my habits.
Well, it's the same with addiction, you know, because people get a lot of warnings.
Yeah.
And very often they don't pay attention, and that's why I refer to addiction as a disease of disaster, because it almost always takes a disaster in order for somebody to pay attention.
Yeah, and you know, if it's a health issue, like a heart attack or a stroke or whatever, you might not ever get back to your baseline. You know, it's like it could take a toll where you can't get to that point where you might have hoped you could have.
And with obesity, you know, so many people have the concurrent health issues of diabetes and high blood pressure. You know, and
heart attack risk. Yeah.
Right. And that's why I think of obesity as an addiction anyway, because if it's a problem and it's a known problem related to the obesity and you can't get yourself to change those behaviors, you know, if it's a problem, if it's caused problems, it's a problem.
Yeah. I want to add two causes. I want to talk about causes of obesity, but I want to add two that I didn't see in your book. They're not real common, but I want to share my experience with you. Two that I see in my book that are very, very interesting, that you don't share in the book, are mold exposure. Somebody chronically exposed to mold will have disruption of their leptin receptors in their hypothalamus. So I treat a lot of sick building syndrome, like, in fact, mold around breast implants and stuff like that, or just mold in the house. And just without any change in diet, exercise, whatever, getting rid of the mold, I have seen them drop 55 pounds.
Seriously?
Of course, their leptin levels are 1,000. Okay.
Wow.
I know. So that's, and I agree with you that thyroid disruption will only put 20 or 30 pounds on you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an interesting study that I want to share with the listeners. They had volunteers eat as much as they could as part of a scientific study, and virtually nobody put on more than 30 or 40 pounds. Isn't that interesting?
That is.
And so without some of these other things that we're going to talk about, you really can't overeat yourself into morbid obesity, okay? I mean, like overeat in a normal psychological state.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, you can overeat yourself into morbid obesity, you know, because people do it every day. But the average person, without the genetic, without the hormonal, without the psychological, and then I want to also mention spiritual things,
right,
is not going to overeat themselves because they can't. They just get full and they produce that hormone that, what is that hormone that
Ghrelin?
Makes you quit eating? Yeah. And they quit eating because it's uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
So, thyroid is something that should be checked, and I like to do basal metabolic temps rather than just rely on thyroid hormone levels, because I believe a lot of endocrine disruptors are out there, including plastics and biotoxins and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually look at temperatures. We try to get the patient's temperature between 97.5 and 98.5 when they first wake up in the morning, in general. And your temperature does fluctuate. And so we use that through iodine if they're iodine deficient, thyroid supplements, and then if possible later on, I mean, if needed, they go on the thyroid hormone, usually a combination of T3 and T4. So we do a lot of that. We balance a lot of hormones, and that is important for, like, say, 20 to 40 pounds. I mean, that's all it'll do. Leptin can do more if you've got that problem.
Right. But
those things need to be looked at. There is also a interesting thing that I found spiritually. If there has been abuse, and I think you mentioned this in your book, but I want to take it back further. I want to take it back to previous lives because some of this isn't in this lifetime. Sometimes people end up as obese children with really no reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I've interviewed a number of doctors who've done past life regression studies, and it appears that a fair number of morbidly obese people actually can be taken back to past life abuse. Mm-hmm. And if they release that, then weight loss becomes a lot easier. So there must be protective layers that we put on ourselves. And you do a very good job in your book describing the layers that people put on because of childhood abuse or sexual abuse. And sexual abuse is inappropriate touching is very common. It's almost like if I change my external appearance,
right,
people won't desire me.
Right. And a lot of times people don't make that connection, but it's one of the most common, like you said, with an obese population.
So it's just, of course not everybody's going to believe in past lives, but I tell them it's really not a matter of belief. If they research it, they'll find that there's plenty of scientific evidence for it, you know, so they can fit that back into their world paradigm if they like. But so if you have an obese person that you suspect is putting layers of protection on them because they aren't overeating, see, that's the key. When you actually look at the food diary, they do not overeat,
mm-hmm,
okay? But something is able to slow their metabolism down to the point where they put weight on very, very easily.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the ones that you need to explore further back, especially if they have no... Well, and as you know, people don't always remember everything.
Correct.
Either.
Correct.
They can have a buried memory that can be very difficult to access, even with therapy,
right,
of something horrible happening. I mean, usually it's not a minor thing. We remember the minor things.
Right.
But something really bad happening, it may take hypnosis to bring that back out.
That's very true.
So, but those are the categories. Because I've seen lots of people for weight loss. So, you know, you have the patients who, and well, let's go back to the ones you talk in your book, the overeating for comfort. Is that the main category that you think morbidly obese people fall into?
Well, I don't know if it's exactly the main category, but it's certainly a common one. And that
mm-hmm.
becomes such a habit then, too, regardless of the origins of the comfort eating, it becomes such a habit. And so there's, you know, you have to address both the current behavioral patterns
mm-hmm.
as well as the underlying emotions. And that's
mm-hmm.
why group therapy can be extremely extremely powerful to help people because they recognize what other people are doing much more easily than they recognize what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they can help point out to somebody else in a group, and then somebody can say, you know what, you said that about 10 minutes ago that you did the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very powerful way to help people accept that they're emotionally eating.
Yeah, that's true. Let's go in a little bit about the psychological, once you identify that that's the problem, once you identify that when you're eating to suppress certain emotions or to take your mind off of things that are more uncomfortable,
mm-hmm.
Once you do that, what are some of the methods that you talk about in the book to shift yourself out of that?
Well, like you said, awareness is the first step in change. So
mm-hmm.
becoming aware of your surroundings when you're eating. Some people truly mindlessly eat, like when they're sitting at their desk and they're working.
Mm-hmm.
They may be eating while they're doing that or watching television. So they have to become aware of when they're actually putting food in their mouth. And some of the ways, and then what you have to do, it's almost like if you have a toddler and they're grabbing the things off your desk or your coffee table that you don't want broken, you have to redirect them.
Mm-hmm.
And so when somebody finds themselves eating when they're not hungry or eating mindlessly or eating because they're upset about something, whatever the reason, then they have to redirect themselves. And in order to do that, especially if somebody's in a pretty worked up mental state, like
mm-hmm.
they just had an argument with somebody, they're not thinking all that clearly. So
mm-hmm.
it's good to have what I refer to as a tip jar. Now, it doesn't literally have to be a jar, but it can be a list or it can be on a pad of paper in someone's purse. But it's a number of things that you can do to distract yourself when you can't think clearly enough and you just want to reach out and eat out of habit.
Mm-hmm.
So a tip jar is a good thing to do, and it can be important things like, you know, return a phone call you've been meaning to, write a thank you note, or it can be mindless, meaningless things like go pick up 10 leaves. It's just the point of distracting yourself from a negative behavior.
Mm-hmm.
So a food jar is a good thing. Also, pretend you're on the show The Millionaire, Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and use your lifelines. Have a
mm-hmm.
list of people that you can call in an emergency. Have a support group online, like there are various obesity support groups online.
Mm-hmm.
Have that link real close so you can get to it if you need it. Have somebody in the office who knows what you're going through so you can go in and say, can I have just a minute? In other words, mm-hmm. you have to plan your work. It's like having what do they call it when people go through treatment? A relapse prevention plan.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have kind of a relapse prevention plan around food, too. And it's
well,
good
food
to have,
is so readily available.
Oh,
that's the problem. I mean, you know, it's different when you're addicted to cocaine or something.
Right. You have
you
to go out
to get it.
Yeah.
But food, I mean, you go into the cafeteria, the break room. Yeah.
Vending machine, absolutely.
Exactly.
It's everywhere.
Yeah.
And another good thing to do is always have a protein bar in your purse
mm-hmm.
or your glove compartment.
For cravings, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about two of my favorite topics, which are cravings, which often have a physical basis,
mm-hmm.
and toxicity, because those two go hand in hand.
Right.
Many people may notice that after they're really stressed or if they have too much estrogen, which you can get even eating a lot of chicken these days,
mm-hmm.
If they have an antibiotic course, they may develop an unknown fatigue, muscle-like, and mental clouding picture. This often happens after surgery, and they blame it on the anesthesia. Well, that's not what caused it. It was caused by the stress of surgery, antibiotics, and then, you know, sometimes other factors, the type of food you eat. You start eating more sugar, you know, your Jell-Os and your this and that and your carbs. Well, you've got yeast overgrowth. And yeast overgrowth is very interesting. It produces a number of biotoxins, including aldehyde. The aldehydes make you feel bad, but something else, the drop in your blood sugar is what I think creates the cravings. So, the people who have candida overgrowth or yeast overgrowth have frequent cravings for sugar. And if I treat them with nystatin, or sometimes if the yeast is all over their body, I have to treat them with a systemic antifungal, their cravings go away. So voila, you know, there you have it. So, I think the yeast has an intelligence, and the yeast likes sugar, so the yeast makes you like sugar. So,
I don't think a lot of people are aware of that either.
They're not, and it produces a chemical depression. Some of these chemicals, there's two chemicals that are very interesting. It actually produces a chemical depression so that you wish you were dead. I mean, when it's real bad, you wish you were dead. Of course, you don't want to kill yourself. You just feel so bad, especially when you wake up in the morning, you wish you were dead. And you don't take action on it, though. It's not like a serotonin-based depression. But but when I question people carefully about their depressions, because if it's serotonin-based, you know, there's treatments for that that are more chemical, you know, more drug-based. But if it's yeast, then they don't work at all, and you much better put them on some antifungals. So we have that, and so what we do there is put them on the low-sugar, low-carb diets, and treat their yeast, and they sometimes lose 30 pounds without any change other than the yeast diet.
That is fascinating.
So definitely think about that, because when do people start to eat? When they're stressed. Well, what happens when you're stressed? What do your adrenals put out?
All
cortisol.
Right.
Cortisol, okay? Wow. Well, cortisol definitely causes yeast overgrowth in those people who already have underlying yeast. And so I try to educate people about that. And when people have this tendency, and it occurs in 1/4 of the population because they do not have the detoxification methods to get the biotoxin out of their body. So they fall into the group that gets fibromyalgia very easily. That's basically fibromyalgia's biotoxin toxicity, and it's linked to certain HLA types. So you can actually measure the HLA type and tell the patient, well, you got this type, therefore you're, you know, when it's really wet outside, you're going to feel bad because there's a lot of biotoxins coming up from the mold in the ground, especially if it's, you know, raining for 2 weeks, like I think we've had it this
week. Yes, it has been, hasn't it?
And you see, I have a patient population full of patients with fibromyalgia, so they all come in and go, oh, I'm feeling horrible, I'm feeling horrible. Well, I have also the Gen A's, and I go, yeah, I'm feeling horrible too, you know. So I say, take large doses of vitamin C, because that'll help get the biotoxin out of your body. And then Dr. Overman created Mold Sporox, which is a natural-based, he's a naturopath, natural-based therapy to also detox the biotoxin. And boy, you feel good again. So that's, you know, you have to do biotoxin detox. And so that is something that needs to be looked at medically, along with the thyroid thing. And you know what's so interesting? What causes the thyroid to go down? Biotoxins cause the thyroid to go down because when the biotoxin comes in, it disrupts leptin receptors in the hypothalamus. That causes an alpha MSH deficiency, which disrupts the entire immune system at the hypothalamic level. Thyroid, adrenal, ADH. You know how you know your ADH is depleted? Because you drink and pee all the time and you shock everything. So if you're doing that, you know you've got a biotoxin on board. And then sex hormones, of course, they go into if it's really bad, they go into premature menopause. They can go into just, you know, their hormones not being right, PMS, that kind of thing. So there's a whole, if your listeners want to look at this, there's a whole chart of the endocrine, immune, and neurological disruption that we call fibromyalgia, basically, that's on chronicneurotoxins.com. And they can go look at that. They can even take a visual contrast sensitivity test that measures a certain thing in the eye. The biotoxin from the mold will go ahead and disrupt that. You may not have the mold in the body, by the way. You may be getting it in through the air conditioning ducts or somewhere else in your house. My patients have it in their body, though, because they have infected breast implants, but that's another story. So the biotoxin coming in can be detected most definitely by something called a visual contrast sensitivity test.
Hmm.
And that's an eye test. And the developer of the eye test didn't even know it could be used for this because he emailed me. He says, I hear you're using my test to do this. And he says, how's that work? And I told him how it worked. It was really funny. But Dr. Shoemaker came up with that. He wrote the book called Mold Warriors. So we can actually scientifically detect if you're having a problem. For example, if your left breast implant is infected with mold, only your left eye will be infected because the biotoxin stays on the same side of the body.
Isn't that amazing?
It's incredible. So not everybody has breast implants, obviously, but a lot of patients after they get gastric bypass get breast implants, as you know.
Absolutely do.
And as a plastic surgeon, you know, I was involved with Obesity Help as well. I've spent 26 years not just doing the gastric bypass surgery when I was a general surgeon, but then after the 200-pound weight loss, you got the facelift, the neck lift,
right.
the arm lift, the breast lift with
That's
implants,
right.
the tummy tuck, the thigh lift, and the hip lift. Okay,
right.
So there you go. And because I was in the military, guess what? People got it all because it was free.
Right. Wow.
You know, I mean, these days their insurance policy may prevent them from getting a lot of stuff done or their pocketbook. But back then we did it all. And so I have a tremendous amount of experience with the weight loss surgery.
You sure do.
Kind of thing.
And then you see people gain the weight back, which is really tragic.
It is. It is. I want to talk about what you can do with that. You do a great job with the emotional side of things and with the with the changing behavior side of things, but there's something in your book you need to think about that's
okay.
not in your book that you need to think about. I have patients who have really nothing other than toxicity as the basis of their obesity.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the toxic chemicals come in two different kinds. Actually, three different kinds because you have toxic emotions, but you do a good job with toxic emotions in your book. But let's just look at chemicals. There are hydrophilic chemicals and hydrophobic chemicals. They're two different chemical classes. The hydrophobic chemicals are more likely to disrupt the endocrine system. That's your plastics, that's your biotoxins, that's your things that affect the nerve myelin sheath. Because the myelin sheath and the cell walls are made up of lipids, and these toxins hide in the lipids. And they're real hard to get out. But Dr. Overman, the same guy I talked about earlier, has developed a method for getting them out, which is genius. He does it through an electrolysis foot bath.
Hmm.
It's a foot bath hooked up to a harmonic quad, which is an electromagnetic field. You put a little bit of salt in there. And then you put ozone in. And somehow the ozone goes into the body and knocks this stuff off of cell walls. And, you know, all my patients, I tell them to do this, and they go, well, I went home and researched this on the Internet, and this stuff doesn't work. I said, well, like hell it doesn't. I said, I've got all these workman's comp patients who have got xylene, methylethyl ketone, all these hydrophobic chemicals, chlorine. We put them in the foot bathroom with their nurse managers, right, with a witness.
Right.
We do this, and the entire room starts smelling like the chemicals.
Wow.
Now, how would that be if it wasn't working?
Wow.
So it is working. So these foot baths, if your primary problem is hydrophobic chemicals, plastics, and you know in the news, the plastic toxicity thing
right.
is getting out of the bag now, which I've known about
right.
for years, but finally the media's catching on. The hydrophobic chemicals, if that's the cause of your obesity or the main cause, and you get those out, you lose 50 pounds without exercise or diet. Yeah. Now, I want to just say a little bit about hydrophilic chemicals, because those are your heavy metals, your arsenics, your things that turn the ionic foot baths, which are different. Those are where the water turns cloudy and gets heavy metal specks in it and all these different crap in it and everything. That is hydrophilic chemicals. Now, why do you want to get those chemicals out of your body? Because those are the chemicals that cause free radicals start punching holes in everything. Blood vessels leading to vascular disease, heart disease, stroke, cancer causing things because free radicals are, so really you want to get rid of those just so that if you're going to have any quality of life, you don't want these conditions that
right.
they increase. And if you want to know what they are, they're the diseases of an industrialized society. So whatever is highest in industrialized societies, that, because we have the highest level of heavy metal toxicity, that's what this will help. But there's an added benefit. When you get rid of the heavy metals, your body can then more easily get rid of the hydrophobic things, including the biotoxins. So that's that we do a lot of that detox in the clinic.
That's wonderful. And again, I think so many people don't know about that.
They really don't. That's new science. It's coming out of functional medicine. There's an Institute for Functional Medicine. If you want to get their monographs and look at their detoxification pathways, it's all very scientifically based. I have had gastric bypass patients who I just, because I'm medical intuitive, I just know their main problem is toxic, not overeating, not
right.
emotional. They don't have any, you know, there's nothing emotional.
Right, there's no history.
I mean, well, they're healthy. They're as healthy as most people, okay? I'm not
right.
saying that we all are a little crazy, right? But I think you would agree with that statement.
I would agree.
You know, my mom was a PhD child psychologist.
Really?
Yeah, she taught at Kansas. She was an operant behavioralist, and I met B.F. Skinner.
Nice.
So how's that? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I helped her do her thesis. So I read all
wow.
of the operant behavioralist stuff, as well as Jung and all the... And then I studied psychology in school because I just love it.
Do you do any work with Carolyn Meese?
I absolutely do. I've interviewed
yeah.
her at least 4 times on the radio
yeah.
show and once in person. She asked if she could put her program at my clinic, but I heard it one time. So, yeah, no, you know, you have to, timing's important. You have
right.
to do the right things at the right time.
Right.
And, you know, we really do have different, it is important to diagnose the problem correctly if you're going to treat it.
That's true.
You know, that's the thing. So if you have as your primary problem toxicity, treatment of the other things aren't going to be successful because and then you might die young because of the toxicity related illnesses.
And where would people go to find out about the toxicity levels?
Well, there's 2 things you can do. The more expensive one is to get a hair analysis. Doctor's Data does a great hair analysis. You take non-bleached or colored hair, sometimes that's pubic hair, but or let it grow out to a point where you can. You send it in, it's $99. They can even, if they want, call our clinic, and we can even do it over the phone. You don't even have to come in for a session with us or a visit. Of course, if you want to come in on your insurance, you can. I mean, I believe detoxification is one of the most important things you can do for your overall
right.
health. But if you're far away, most of my patients are out of state, we just send them the hair analysis with the instructions. They do it and send it in. And then that gives me an overall picture of about 30 or 35 chemicals and toxins. That does not give me a picture of hydrophobic toxins, plastics, and organic chemicals like ketones that often are very, very likely to cause autoimmune diseases. Like Raynaud's, which is the bluish discoloration in cold, if you take that's usually due to ketone exposure. If you take arginine, you can make that go away.
Hmm.
That's in my book, The Naked Truth About Breast Implants. I discovered all this really neat stuff because I see all these Workman's Comp patients
right.
on one hand, and on the other hand, I see the breast implant patients, and the most common chemical they have in their body from silicone is methylethyl ketone, and almost 100% of them have Raynaud's. So the importance of chemical detoxification is obvious, you know, if you're chemically toxic. So that's what you do. But if you don't want to do that, just go and get an ionic foot bath somewhere. You know, Aqua Detox is one of the best ones. There's other good ones. Go to a health food store, a chiropractic, or whatever, your naturopath, or sometimes your holistic doctor, and just get a foot bath.
I think that's a great suggestion for all of the obese patients.
Right. And if you don't have toxicity, like I have a homeopath running my clinic, was my front desk supervisor, and she was raised in India.
Mm-hmm.
She did a foot bath, because she had hypertension. I said, well, you gotta do a foot bath, right? She had a foot bath, it was like nothing. She wasn't raised in the U.S. She wasn't toxic.
Right. Right.
Isn't that wild?
It is wild.
And because they see people from all walks of toxicity, the people in the clinic can tell you, if foot baths are going to be, and foot baths are $25 to $35. So for $25 to $35, you can get a good picture of at least hydrophilic chemicals. Now the hydrophobic chemicals, as I mentioned earlier, are a little bit more difficult to diagnose, and they're easy to treat with the electrolysis foot bath, but they're more difficult to diagnose, except that you can do it by history. You know, have you eaten a lot of chicken? Why do you think all these girls need bras at age 8?
Right, right.
I don't know how old you are, but I'm 55. Nobody at age 8 had a bra when
I
was 8.
Absolutely not, yeah.
Okay. So what is it? Well, I think it's chicken. I mean, I eat chicken. I'm not dissing chicken. I like chicken. But then I go get my foot baths because I really think that the hormones and other chemicals that we're taking in, and we might not even know where they're coming from, the plastic.
Well, I was going to say, you know, I'm
sure everywhere.
There's just so much that's yet to be explored. And you've done a great deal more than, you know, even the surgeons that I work with on a regular basis. You know, we need to be talking about these things.
Well, we do, and one thing, let me just mention this, for your patients after gastric bypass or banding or any really gastric bypass being probably the worst one because of some of the physical things, but protein malnutrition is a very, very big problem. So I had one of my employees that had a gastric bypass, and she couldn't keep her breast implants in their pocket. They would keep going into the axilla. So
she was
a researcher, so I sent her out to research. I said, give me a product that I could put somebody on and get their proteins to be okay.
Mm-hmm.
And she did, you know, and that product's called Calorat. So I put my patients, I do a lot of breast augments. I do a lot of breast explants, but then people want stuff put back in, and we don't have stem cells yet. So, but the categories I need to put people on protein, and sometimes eating protein isn't enough because, as you know, you can eat a lot of protein as a gastric bypass patient and not absorb it.
Exactly.
Bulimics, gastric bypass, alcoholics, and people who have are on diets that are low protein. I actually had a patient die because she went on a low protein diet.
Oh my gosh.
She was a quadriplegic, and she decided she wanted to lose weight, and she went on a low-protein diet in a nursing home, and guess what? A wound that was totally closed, totally fine, no problems, broke down, led to osteomyelitis, and she died of infection.
Oh, that's hot.
So if you don't think a diet can't kill you, think again. It can. It can. Now, she did have the wound, you know, I mean, she had exacerbating factors. So, and gastric bypass patients have a whole bunch of nutritional needs that are extremely important. Iron and B12 come to mind, but believe me, there's a lot more than that. We have something called we have two different tests that are great to determine that. One's called a spectrocell analysis. It analyzes chemicals within the cell. And you can have somebody on massive doses of B12, but they can still have intracellular B12 deficiencies. And then there's ways, we have other ways, pathway manipulations to get them so that they can actually get the B12 into the cell. And serum levels don't count, do they? I mean, it's really the intracellular levels that you need to know. See, that's what functional medicine teaches us. You have to look inside the cell. The other thing is a NutriVal evaluation that looks at all these functional pathways, and you can actually determine where the problem is in the functional pathway and then correct it at that level. So that's very efficient. Rather than just putting people on $200 of nutritional supplements and putting everybody on the same thing, we try to individualize it, and we have family practice doctors working at Millennium Healthcare that are very good at this, and of course we have plastic surgeons who are excellent at, you know, all the weight loss surgery. So we work together on that and get better results because we understand the physiology and the pathophysiology that occurs with this. Now, there's a whole thing coming up with gastric banding. What's that about?
In what sense?
It's taking over, isn't it?
The
gastric banding? Yeah.
Well, you know, it seems like it's beginning to fade a little bit because...
Really? Okay.
Yeah, you know...
Tell me about that. What's the problem?
Well, the problem is people find their way around that little band. You know, they find ways to cheat.
Mm-hmm.
And the initial weight gain takes more time, the initial weight loss takes more time,
mm-hmm.
and people gain weight back more easily. So there's a lot of people who have had bands now going in for revision surgeries.
Hmm.
And that seems to be what's on the rise.
Right. I want to mention one other thing. The science behind this is also in my book and also in the medical literature, but there are certain HLA types that cannot take any silicone in their body at all. I mean, not even tear tear duct silicone, little tiny.
That's something they can test prior to having.
Yes, and let me just educate you so you can educate other people.
Absolutely.
HLA B27 and HLA DR53. Those two cannot take any silicone in their body. Dr. Leroy Young, who was actually my boss when I was a medical student, he was a resident at WashU, published the papers on 53. In my book is a funny story about an FDA research scientist. It wasn't funny to her. Funny story about an FDA research scientist who got saline implants, and she was sure they were safe. She was an FDA research scientist, right?
Right.
She calls me, and she gets sick as she can be within weeks of putting them
in. I know.
And autoimmune disease starts getting these big rheumatoid nodules. And as you know, silicone implants or saline implants cause nothing. And, of course, silicone doesn't cause any systemic disease. That's what the media would have you believe that was paid for by Dow Chemical. But anyway, I digress. But anyway, so she calls me up. She's out of state, of course. I think she's in Michigan. But anyway, I say, well, you have it sounds to me like you have HLA B27. And sure enough, she does.
Wow.
So she tells her story in the book. There's 8 patient stories in the book, which are going to be a little embarrassing to the plastic surgery community since they're from very educated and, you know, not ditzy, money-grubbing menopausal females. You know, I've got some really good stories. But anyway, she tells her story about, you know, getting her implants out and then the slow path to recovery because, of course, then you have to rebuild the immune system and you have to... You know, you have to. But everything disappeared. She's fine, other than she's occasionally more tired than she thinks she should be.
So she could have known about that prior to?
Yes.
And what would be the test for that?
The HLA test.
Oh, okay.
It's a genetic. Let me give you the science. Histocompatibility locus A. It's a genetic thing that if you have that, chances are in your family, you'll have a family history of ankylosing spondylitis and other autoimmune diseases. And actually, the implant companies did put in their warnings, which was smart, saying that if you have a family history or you yourself have an autoimmune disease, which, by the way, includes MS, you should not get implants. And in my experience, people who have ignored that warning get real sick real quick.
I'll be down.
So we may not have worked out all of the science about it because I think there's other HLA types we don't know about. But you can certainly my warning would be don't do the banding if they're using silicone. I don't know. There might be other bands available now. I know they had the donut of silicone for a while because you could get real sick real quick.
Hmm.
And, of course, your doctors would say it has nothing to do with your surgery. Because they don't know, but it does.
And people who are going to have breast reconstruction after.
Should know that as well.
Right,
yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah. So that's true.
Very good information.
They should just read my book, you know. Let me put a plug in for my book there, huh?
Your show.
Yeah, right. I want to plug my other book because it just came out yesterday.
Oh,
you might like
fun.
This book, yeah. Let me grab it. It's real. Hold on just a second. Okay, you might really like this one. It's called Goddess Shift, Women Leading for a Change. Stephanie Marone, who she's a wonderful medical writer and has about 10 books out on her natural mental health series. I've done this radio show for 16 years, so I've interviewed her on multiple occasions. So she calls me up. She says, Susan, you need to be in this goddess book. And I go, Stephanie, I don't have time. I'm too busy. She says, I'll call you up and interview you. And then I'll write the chapter for you. And she did.
Oh, awesome.
So there's 40, yes, sweetheart. There's 42 authors in here. Let me just go through. Barbara Max Hubbard, Jane Fonda, Joan Marler, Susanna Budapest, who actually was the last, I think Susanna, I'm reading the book now, I think Susanna was the last woman in the U.S. arrested for witchcraft.
Oh my God.
It was in 75. She was doing a tarot reading.
Seriously?
Seriously, yeah. She was arrested for witchcraft and actually convicted and spent
wow.
nine years doing the appeals and then finally got the California law taken off the books.
Wow. Then,
I know. Starhawk, B. Raven Lee, Eve Ensler, Judy Gerlin, Madonna, Judy Chicago, Renee Fleming, Shirley MacLaine, Whoopi Goldberg, Angelina Jolie. I've gotten up to Angelina Jolie. I'm reading her story now. Barbara Walters, Michelle Obama, Barbara Lee.
Wow.
Kid. It gets better. of course, me. And let's see. My chapter is called The Spiritual Healer and Synthesis Medicine, I think. Let me look. I'm not sure exactly.
I saw that on your website,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. And Olympia Dukakis, Oprah Winfrey, and J.K. Rowling. Now, J.K.
Wow.
Rowling wrote an interesting one. Now, let me give you the title of hers. It's The Friend Benefits of Failure and the Importance of Imagination. You know how many times her book was rejected?
How many?
About 50.
Holy moly.
I know. No, I haven't read her. No, I read that somewhere else. I haven't read
right.
her story yet. So
I'm
only up to Angelina Jolie, who's giving a fascinating account of why she does humanitarian work, including some really interesting insights.
Great book. You're right. Sounds fabulous.
Isn't that wonderful? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that just came out, and I guess they can get it on Amazon. We also have it for sale at through our websites. If they go to www.thenakedtruthaboutbreastimplants.com, it's up there for sale as well now. So, the goddess concept is important, and you actually do bring it up in your book, how women often are made to feel that everything's their fault. They often have alcoholic fathers or other relatives or abusive alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
Not all alcoholics are abusive, as you know. Other people who are very abusive toward them because they are thought of as second-class citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And so this book, they need to read this book. Those people need to read this book.
Yes, they do. Because
this book is really neat. So anyway. Well, what other things shall we talk about in terms of helping people with their addictions? What things do they need to know other than?
Well, I think they also need to know that in addition to their physical health and their spiritual health, any addiction affects their families and their loved
mm-hmm.
ones. And so as they recover from obesity or whatever their addiction happens to be,
mm-hmm.
they need to include their families in the process.
Right.
Because any kind of addiction is a family illness.
Right, that's true.
And so, you know, your family has been shut out on a lot of levels.
Mm-hmm.
And so include them in the recovery.
That's good advice. And you go into, we don't have time to go into it now because we're at the end of our hour, but you do go into a good discussion of the spiritual, your relationship to God, and a lot of other very important things to get back your self-worth.
And I think it has to start there.
Quit
you know, your relationship with yourself and your relationship
right.
with God.
Yeah, exactly.
Cleared up.
If you can't love yourself, you can't love others. And that,
right.
that therein is the basis of the dysfunctional family.
So true.
Who are together for reasons other than true
Absolutely.
Love.
Absolutely. Right.
Well, it's been a real pleasure interviewing you today.
You have given me a lot of great information that I'm going to take back and incorporate in my work with patients as well.
Well, thank you.
Thank you.
We appreciate that. Next week we have, we interviewed this guy last week because we had an emergency cancellation. So last week we interviewed the guy with Cosmic Conversations. He's an astronomer who interviewed everybody in the world who are experts on what the universe is, both scientists and spiritual leaders. And so he wrote a book called Cosmic Conversations. That was a really interesting interview.
Not bad.
So it's not what's on the schedule. We're actually going to interview Tricia McKinnon, who wrote a book on Jesus and the early years and the esoteric information available about Jesus' life. And this book is really turning everybody in the academic world on their heads. It's going to be a fabulous book, and it's going to be released in March. And then on the 20th, we have Dr. Jonathan Ellerby with a CD, Your Spiritual Personality. And then on the 27th, Michael Brown, The Presence Process, A Healing Journey into Present Moment Awareness. And you actually mentioned this in your book, how important it is to not go into the past with regret or not go into the future with fear. Right. And so that's a topic that he is an expert in. And then Stephanie is I'm going to interview Stephanie on the Goddess Book on the 6th of March. And then we have Consciousness is All, Now Life is Completely New on the 10th, and then another discussion with Dr. Horowitz on the flu and other viral pandemics, which I think it's very important to know about right now.
Sure,
we also have Noetic Science every third Thursday, so that would be February 18th at 7:15 at the Dunwoody office. We're going to be talking about something very interesting in this Noetic Science. In fact, I was up till about 1 in the morning discussing with the presenter what we're going to present. It's a frequency-based therapy that can not only help you with weight loss, addictions, and other things, but actually can help you maintain the highest frequency that you can get in order to have the healthiest body you can get, because frequency precedes chemistry. And instead of having people take all these supplements and spend all these money on supplements, we try to limit the supplements to just hold the frequency. And so he'll be explaining that on Thursday, February 18th. And I really believe that this biophysics-based frequency medicine is going to be wonderful. So weight loss is one of the things that can be addressed with this, because it can balance all the hormonal stuff. And then if you take care of the psychological stuff with the stuff in your book, with the suggestions in your book, Eat It Up, The Complete Mind, Body, Spirit Guide to a Full Life After Weight Loss Surgery. How's that for?
It's a title, isn't it?
There you go. It is. And look at your website, which I think you've got in here. Let me see. You want to tell them your website real quick?
Sure. www.mindbodyhealthservices.com.
Great. And this is published by Transformation Media Books. And that would be www.transformationmediabooks.com.
Right.
Well, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
And we will talk with all of our listeners, or actually we'll be back next week. Have a great week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Headaches, back pain, migraines, joint pain, nothing worse than the nagging, unending discomfort of daily aches and pains. If you have pain and are looking for more natural solutions to eliminate your pain, Millennium Healthcare is for you. Millennium Healthcare's professionals will work for you. For help or more information on natural pain relief, call Millennium Healthcare at 770-390-0012. That's 770-390-0012. Millennium Healthcare. Pain relief naturally.